As we enter the sacred pages of the scriptures, the first four words of the Bible are as important, if not more so, than so many others. And it just simply says, in the beginning, God. You ever think about that? Before anything was, God was. In the beginning, God was out there somewhere in the nothingness. And I often wonder to myself, if we were created by God, then who created God? Right? Where did he come from? It's the kind of thing that kind of makes your head hurt. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 2, it describes for us those first few moments before the world begins. And it says, now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. It gives me an image that God started with the earth in a state much like a potter begins with just a lump of clay. But then we see something interesting also in this verse where we find the first encounter with God is an image of him hovering over the watery deep. But what was he doing hovering there? The Hebrew word for hover also has the idea of brooding. So just for me, in my head, I like to think of it as the Bible picks up right when God is in deep thought about what he's going to do next. You know, the important last-minute decisions, like, is he going to make our noses pop out of the front of our face or out of the back of your head? We have no idea, but to me, it seems that we catch God hovering in a moment where he is developing a strategy before the beginning of the beginning. Now, the Hebrew word that is used here for God, because the Old Testament scriptures were written in the Hebrew language, and the Hebrew word that was used for God here is distinct from other places in the Bible. In fact, 32 times in just this chapter alone, the Creator, God, is called Elohim, a Hebrew word that emphasizes the majesty of God, the power of God. Whenever it is used to describe him as the Creator, he is always referred to as Elohim. We're used to hearing titles from the Old Testament, especially of God, such as Yahweh or Jehovah, which are more intimate titles where it describes him as the God who is in relationship with his people. But in direct contrast, every time the Bible refers to God as the Creator, it is Elohim, which is a title that says whether you're ready for it or not, whether you know it or not, you are standing in the presence of the one who controls the entire universe. He is the maker of all things. And then in verse 3 it begins, and God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. As you read through the rest of Genesis 1, you almost hear the rhythm of creation. There was evening, there was morning, the second day. Same pattern is repeated over and over as God creates something, steps back, takes a look, sees that it is good. And it's evening, and there was morning, the third day. During the first 3 days of the creation account, God forms the cosmos, the basic structure of the universe. And then, for the next 3 days, he begins to fill it in with color and excitement. And so in day one, he forms the light and the darkness. In day two, the sky and the sea. Day three is dry land and begins to have plants emerge. Day four, he fills the universe with the sun and the moon and the stars. Day five are the living creatures of the sea and the birds of the air, until you come to day six, where you begin to see the animals running around. And he breathes life into the first man as that man takes his first breath. In this ancient writing of the creation account, I would argue that this is not just a report on what God created, but this tells us that his creation has an order to it. There is an intelligence about it. There was an overall systematic design to it. For I believe that God created the heavens and the earth, and nothing makes me feel like I am in the presence of God as when I am standing in the midst of the beauty of his creation, and I am in awe, and something inside of me stirs in my very soul. And it's in those moments that you know you are standing in the house of God. So we are in the beginning of this series where we're taking an overview of the Bible. And we've spent the last couple weeks just asking the question, what is your source of truth for your life? What are you willing to bet your life on? And so we've talked about the fact that if the Bible really is our source of truth, then we've got to be able to rely on it and trust it. And so we've spent a couple weeks looking at the reliability of the Bible. And if you've made the decision that you are going to accept the Bible as your source of truth, then today is your first big test, because to accept the Bible is to accept, and to go against the rest of culture, by the way, and accept that you were created by God and that you're no accident. There is no question that most scientists today believe the cosmos began at the moment of the Big Bang, as they call it, somewhere between 10 and 20 billion years ago. They believe the planet's features were molded by natural forces while life began to develop gradually from simple organisms to more complex ones until eventually the human race begins to evolve. But then you read Genesis chapter 1 and 2, which clearly states that God created the heavens and the earth and everything in the earth, including you and me, and it leaves you asking the question, can both of these apparently contradictory ideas be two ways of looking at the exact same thing? Is it even possible? The idea that science and religion are at war with each other is a relatively recent idea, because before Darwinism, scientists began with the presupposition in their studies that God created all things. So now it appears that the possibility of God has been removed from science altogether and replaced with a concept called naturalism. And naturalism is the view that nothing outside of nature is real, and the only way to discover truth is through science. There is nothing metaphysical out there. And now modern media has made it popular to make Christians look ignorant and close-minded if we take the view that we believe in creation, while science has become the fraternity for the intelligent and the open-minded because they believe in evolution. I heard an interesting perspective on the scientific community from an investigative journalist on a podcast that I listened to called Nina Tyshels, and she's the author of The Big Fat Surprise. And her whole thing is she's actually arguing that, you know, scientists are wrong in what they have said has been healthy for you and not healthy for you, and what's been healthy for your heart. And so she's speaking in the context of the nutritional sciences. And by the way, she would be horrified if she knew that I was using her quote in this context, because she's not a believer. But Here's what she said that I thought was quite fascinating and true. She says, scientists fall in love with their own beliefs. They fall in love with their own hypothesis. They're just humans, after all, with egos. Just like the rest of us, they fall in love with their ideas and they ignore anything that contradicts it. So scientists, I don't know if you've ever met one, but they're taught to not be human. And if you've ever talked to one, you kind of get that idea. They're taught to, you know, rigorously distrust their beliefs and find every way possible to shoot down their own hypothesis, because it is only in the act of trying to disprove something that you can actually begin to prove it. I mean, that's the job of being a scientist. And so when you look at the theory of evolution, there's a whole lot of holes and missing pieces, and it should never, ever be put out there by the scientific community as being truth, and yet it is, because they love this idea of evolution. Are you placing your faith as the source of your truth in science? I'm not going to argue that there are some really smart people, people much smarter than me. I have a great respect for the scientific community, and all the sciences that are done are amazing. And they have made theories about the origin of life that are really smart theories. And society, however, has accepted them as being true. And as Christians who aren't degreed in science, it can be a little intimidating to even try to have some of these conversations. But the main point of conflict between religion and science is this idea of evolution versus creation. And the religious community has, you know, vilified scientists as being evil, and scientists has vilified Christianity, or at least maybe dismissed it as just being naive and ignorant. But when you speak of the theory of evolution, there are really two kinds of evolution. There's the microevolution, and then there's macroevolution. Now, there's no question in my mind that microevolution is scientific and true and can be proven. So, for example, there are 200 kinds of dogs that are all part of the same species, right? And we know that all breeds of dogs were produced either through the intentional breeding of us humans or the accidental or somehow intentional breeding of dogs themselves. And so, for instance, if a schnauzer spends a romantic evening with a poodle, what do you get? Isn't that cute? Yeah, you get a schnoodle. Still the creation of God, but that's microevolution at its finest. Or by contrast, you have this poor guy. I don't know if his mother loves him. The duck-billed platypus. He has webbed feet and a beaver tail. He lays eggs, talk about an identity crisis, and a bill that looks like a duck. But I'm telling you, God did not come up with this thing. This is way too ugly. So there was some duck that was out there doing something he shouldn't have been doing. So nobody doubts, you know, so this is microevolution gone very, very wrong. So nobody doubts that there is microevolution. It's scientific. There's great research about it. And so that exists. Macroevolution is a whole different thing. So this is really the guts of evolution, because this is the theory that says all life came from non-living matter over millions and millions of years. And through genetic variation, life became increasingly more complex through mutations and natural selection, aka the survival of the fittest. So under the theory of macroevolution, you begin with a single-celled amoeba, right? Which changes over time into multicellular life and eventually somehow gives birth to a fish, which eventually gives birth to amphibians. And then you have amphibians that morph into reptiles, and reptiles then somehow make the leap into apes, and then ultimately, here we are back on crouched over on our computers. This is the greatness of evolution. So the reason why scientists are really out there trying to prove that the universe is 10, 20 billion years old, it takes a lot of time for that to happen, right? For this evolutionary process to happen over a long period of time. And then you have Christians who are desperately trying to prove that the Earth is only 3,000 years old, because if you take the Bible in a literal sense and you try to put a timetable to it, it's around 3,000 years. And so there's this war that occurs between, you know, just based on the years of the origin of life. But what most people don't know is that when Darwin formulated his theory in the mid-1800s, he actually admitted that there was no evidence to support his theory. Like, there were no fossils of ancient animals at the time to support the idea that they gradually morphed one into the other. In other words, Darwin recognized that if that kind of gradual change had really happened, there should be plenty of fossils that were so-called transitional links, right? That these fossils filled the gaps between different kinds of animals. So, for instance, if fish morphed into amphibians, there should be something out there where there's like a half amphibian, half fish kind of thing, or an ape that had more of a reptilian head if reptiles were to have morphed into apes. So Darwin questioned his own theory, and let me read you what he wrote. He said, innumerable transitional forms must have existed, right? This is his supposition. They must have existed. He believes this in his heart. But why? Why do we not find them embedded in the countless numbers of the crust of the earth? Geology assuredly does not reveal any such finely graduated organic change. And this is perhaps the most obvious and serious objection which can be argued against the theory of evolution. So here, as a scientist, he's actually doing the right job, right? He's rigorously trying to disprove his own theory, which is his job. But he still believes in his heart that it's true. And he predicted one day that there would be fossils that would be unearthed, that would, you know, be these transitional links that would be discovered so his theory could be proven true. It never happened. Now, fast forward to more modern times and listen to the words of Dr. Stephen Jay Gould. He's a leading evolutionist and professor of geology at Harvard University. And he talks about the trade secret among scientists. And he says, after 120 years of fossil research after Darwin, it has become abundantly clear that the fossil record will not confirm Darwin's predictions. The theory of evolution is just that. It's a theory. It's based on some scientific facts. Some really smart people have taken a whack at this and come up with this. But let me be very clear about something. Neither the biblical account of creation or the theory of evolution can be proven scientifically. Neither one. Meaning, neither one can be reproduced in a lab or observed. The irony is that, in my opinion, it takes as much, if not more, faith to believe in the theory of evolution than it does in creation. When you really look at those missing links and you look at the jumps, those are leaps of faith in the evolutionary chain, when you really spend some time to that. And so here's what I want you to hear. As a Christian, you should never, ever be embarrassed, no matter what context you're in. You should never be embarrassed in believing in the biblical account of creation. Because as we've talked about ad nauseum for the last couple weeks, where the Bible speaks on history, history has always confirmed it. Where it speaks about geography, geography has always verified it. And now in modern times, archaeology, where it's been able to test it, it is always tested true. In every instance where the Bible can be tested, it is always tested true. When you get down to it, the Bible does not explain in any scientific sense how creation came into existence. It is not a scientific textbook. What it does tell us is one very, very important fact. In the beginning, God. Before anything was, God was. In Hebrews chapter 11, verses 1 and 3, it says, "Now faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see." But listen to verse 3. "So by faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command, so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible." Even the Apostle Paul, who is a great person of faith, who I'm sure wanted to try to verify or prove something, says this is an issue of faith. By definition, faith accepts the fact that there are just some things that we just don't know. I have listened to many scientists and very smart people on both sides of the creation versus evolution debate. And they debate this issue, and when you get down to it, when you get down to the end, after they have just annihilated each other with as much debating as they could do, at the end of the day, they both say the same thing. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know exactly how the world was formed because no one was there and you can't scientifically reproduce it. And so when you say that the world started with a big bang, they can't prove it, but I can't refute it. Nor can they disprove that the big bang actually came as a result of God speaking the world into existence. And when he did, he sent isotopes going bonkers, colliding against each other, and bang, God created the heavens and the earth. No one can refute that. And yet, it drives me nuts because Christians still try and debate whether or not it was 6 literal days that God created the world and that the earth is 3,000 years old versus 10 billion, and this whole thing is just an illogical debate that occurs, trying to prove creation through a science that cannot prove it. It would have been nice for somebody to have been able to capture a selfie of God, you know, with the world in his hand or something. I mean, that'd be awesome. But we're just left with just one thing. Faith. I'll tell you this. By faith, I believe the world was no accident. When I get into the nuts and bolts of this place, it's amazing. We live in a very precise world where everything works so perfectly. I mean, the earth rotating on its axis while at the same time orbiting around the sun at the exact distance that we need to be from the sun so the sun doesn't turn the earth into a big fireball. All the while, the moon is orbiting around us without ever colliding. One little slip up, one mistimed movement, and boom, we are all finished. Is that an accident? Or did somebody just take that and spin it into existence? Ask yourself, does it seem like an accident to you? And then there are just crazy, emotional, subjective things that I see in this world that make me believe that there is a creator God who loves us. Take the male Gentoo penguin, for example. These guys, they search through piles of pebbles to find the smoothest, most beautiful pebble. Do you know why? Because when he finds the perfect pebble, he presents it to the female Gentoo penguin of his dreams. And if she accepts that pebble, she places it in her nest for the rest of her life, and they mate for the rest of their lives. Isn't that incredible? Or take the sea otter here. When they're taking a nap out in the ocean, they float, and so in an effort to not drift apart, they hold hands while they sleep so they don't drift apart from each other. Guys, we could get some marital lessons here from the otters. And then, of course, is my favorite, which is the woodpecker. This always amazes me. There is a sponge-like pad that goes between the woodpecker's bill and his little brain so that when he pecks a hole in a tree, he doesn't knock himself unconscious. Who thinks of that? We have a God who is not only Elohim, but he is Yahweh. And he loves us enough that he cares about every little detail of this world. If he cares about the little woodpecker like that, how much more does he care about what's going on in your life? One of the world's leading experts in molecular science is Dr. James Tour of Rice University. This guy is absolutely a genius. He is a scientist that understands every aspect of how molecules and atoms are made up, and he says this: I stand in awe of God because of what he's done through his creation. He said, only a rookie who knows nothing about science would say science takes away from faith. If you really study science, he said, it will bring you closer to God. The bottom line is that it really does, for me, take more faith to believe that this whole thing could be an accident than it does to believe that God was behind the complexity and organization and design of every little aspect of this world. Science does not disprove the existence of God any more than I can prove that God exists. So I don't know. I can't know. But I can believe. And I believe that God created the heavens and the earth. I believe that he created you and me and every sunset that makes me remember my creator. And it's not because of some scientific theory or because somebody had to prove it to me, because I know that when I stand there in the house of God and I see that beauty, there is something that stirs deep inside of me that tells me there is an Elohim. And I also believe that on that day, when I step out of this world and into the next and I'm standing there in front of my Maker, I'll be glad to know that he's not only the Elohim, but he is the Yahweh. He is the God of small things who loves us beyond belief. He's big enough to be your God. Because I believe in the beginning,